Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is the Talk Back Hour, your opportunity to call in and share your points of view on any of the topics we discuss or anything else that you feel is relevant. So what you have to do is you have to call this number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And also, there are those of you who now realize how important it is to write down that other number, and that is 619-550-0869. That's in case you're driving somewhere on a trip and you'd like to hear the program or go to the archives and download it. Well, that can always get you through, no matter what else is happening. 619-550-0869. Now, today, aside from health and healing, lots of information on that. I'm going to show you the latest on vitamin D, also how you can live a longer life, what role the glucose is going to be dealing with when it comes to green tea, and also how DHA, that's what you find in flaxseed or fish, impacts inflammation, and also an herb for thought. Maybe you've heard of it. Patchouli. Maybe you haven't. I'll give you more on it. Then I'm going to give you the latest on Stanford University scientists. They now say what I've been talking about for a number of years. The climate change is occurring 10 times. That's 1,000% faster than any time in the past 65 million years. Also from Douglas Yates of Counterpunch, how President Obama made Fukushima worse. Also, one of our listeners wrote to Congressperson Kristen Gillibrand about GMOs. Well, we'll tell you what the congressman wrote back, and we thank Margareta King for having written it. And also, new information, how our social media, our behavior, is now a part of the spying records. They want to know everything about you, all the time. Why? Why is it their business? Well, they believe that it is their business. Are we protesting? No. So what does it say that when they want to know everything in the world about us, where we're at, what we've watched on television, what movies we've gone to, who we speak to, what we say? They actually have captured every single conversation you've had in the last 15 years, every email you've made, everything you've done. They want that, and they have it. They lied. They said they didn't, but now we know for sure that they have. Well, I'm going to give you some shocking revelations about how private prisons make their money. I'm going to give you more revelations about how they're breaking new revelations every day about the spying on us. Lots to talk about. Let's begin. We want to live a longer life. Most of us do. And we actually make an effort to do that. And one of the things that we could do, according to the Journal of Nutrition, and this was a 12-year study, they found that if you are consuming more polyphenols, now if you've been listening to this program, you know that polyphenols come from eating lots of fruits, blueberries, raspberries, pomegranates, strawberries, and we know that these polyphenols are antioxidants, they're anti-inflammatory, they're anti-obesity. This particular study was with 800 women and men, and they found that those that can had the largest amount of polyphenols in their diet, that they were able to live longer. In fact, it reduced the risk of dying by 30% during that period of time. Well, that's a big, big positive. So more blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, cherries every day. We have a lot of people who are losing their memory. One nutrient stands out, and it can improve your memory and attention. According to two separate research studies, three actually, one in Spain, one in Venezuela, and one in England, they all worked on choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E. Now, choline is a member of the B complex. It's extremely beneficial to us. And they found that the more choline in this research study, the better the memory. So I'm suggesting choline at about 500 milligrams a day. That can make a difference. Also, there's good evidence that vitamin D can help protect women from uterine fibroids. This is an important study published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And what they found was that a high degree of American women have a one fibroid with two different complications. But when they looked at the levels of vitamin D3, there was an inverse ratio, meaning the higher level of vitamin D3, the less fibroid you have, the lower amount of vitamin D3, the more fibroid you have. So they said in here there was a 240% different risk of fibroids experienced by deficient women. That's a big difference. So let's get vitamin D3. You don't have to take a lot, maybe 2,000 units a day. It's easy and inexpensive to take. Also, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, two separate universities looked at 13 studies involving 19,000 participants. And what they found was that the higher the blood antioxidant levels, the lower the risk of cataracts. Now, here's what they found. If you have higher intakes of vitamin A, C, E, alpha-carotene, beta-carotene, lutein, zeaxanthin, lycopene, you had less by 25% getting cataracts. That's easy to get those. I consider those relatively easy and small potencies. But a new study shows that we're really deficient in some nutrients. This is from the Institute of Food Technologists annual meeting. And here's what it says, quote, a presentation at the Institute for Food Technologists annual meeting revealed a profound lack of omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids in the North American diet, despite what is known of their benefits. Physicians and their patients are being made increasingly aware of the role of omega-3 fatty acids in the prevention or reduction of inflammatory disorders and cardiovascular disease, among other conditions. A Dr. Bruce Holub of the University of Guelph at Oxford University found that we are profoundly deficient, that we're not even getting 200 milligrams a day, but we should be getting 1,000 milligrams a day. So that's important. And another study published in the Journal of Neural Regeneration Research revealed a greater risk of deficient serum levels of vitamin D in patients who had undergone treatment at a neurosurgical intensive care unit. So once again, the whole field of mental health is not paying attention to what people need for brain health, and it's vitamin D, absolutely. Now, I'm a big believer in turning off inflammation in the body. Vitamin C will do that. Green tea will do it. Cinnamon is phenomenal for turning off inflammation in the body. It doesn't matter whether it's inflammation in your heart, your liver, your kidneys, your brain, your eyes. It's great. This is the latest study and done at Harvard Medical School. And it says, quote, the FASEB Journal published the discovery of researchers at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospitals and Harvard Medical School on the mechanism for DHA, an omega-3 fatty acid that occurs in fish oil and algae, in reducing inflammation. Then it goes on to talk about how it actually impacts the inflammatory process. What this means in lay language is, if you eat sardines, or if you were to eat wild salmon, you'd be getting the omega-3, and they in turn would turn off inflammation in the body. If you took walnuts, avocados, flaxseed, you could also turn off inflammation in the body. Either way, you don't want all that inflammation. That's what leads to your cells dying or being altered prematurely. Another study from the Science Translational Medicine shows, this was done at the University Medical Center in Hamburg, and the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory that we are having prematurely aging of our bones because we don't have enough vitamin D. Now, mind you, a lot of people say, well, I get my calcium. Yeah, but do you get magnesium in the same amount with it? Do you get boron? Do you get manganese? Do you have all these other nutrients that you need? And the answer is no. Phosphorus is essential. Vitamin C, vitamin D, all of these work together. There's a synergism. So get your vitamin D, 1,000 units, when you get your calcium and magnesium, and therefore you help prevent osteoporosis. And finally, green tea is associated with improved glucose control. And the results of a meta-analysis described in an article published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition reaffirmed the benefit of drinking green tea in maintaining glucose control over individuals at risk of metabolic syndrome. They looked at 17 separate studies, over 1,000 people, and they found this. When you drink green tea, you're getting a chemical called catechin, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N. And that is anywhere from 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day. And that helps control your glucose. Now, imagine you got 25 million Americans who have diagnosed with diabetes, and you have another probably 75 million who are pre-diabetic and haven't yet been diagnosed. All of those people would benefit from green tea. And that's just crucial. Just two other things. For those of you who've been eating your fruits and vegetables or taking compounding powders, you're on the right trail here. This is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It reveals, quote, an association between the increased vegetable and fruit intake and a lower risk of dying during a 13-year follow-up period. They looked at 38,221 participants in the cohort of Swedish men, and this was over a period of years, and they found, 13 years, and they found that the more fruits and vegetables, the longer you lived. Quote, in comparison with subjects who consumed the recommended 5 servings of fruits and vegetables per day, those who did not consume fruits and vegetables had a 53% greater risk of dying over follow-up. Wow. Now, that's just from 5 servings? I believe we should be having 12 servings a day. Or if you're taking powders, it's actually going to be more because you're getting concentrate. So that means you could be adding a lot of years onto your lifespan with fruits and vegetables. One last study. This comes from Occupation Environmental Medicine. And it says, the results of this study reveal a significant association between long-term night shift work and a higher risk of breast cancer. And they looked at over 1,134 women. And they said that, you know, you really increase your risk of breast cancer if you work night shifts. But they also found in a separate study that you are going to die quicker working night shifts. You could knock off as much as 10 years of your life from working night shifts. I'm Gary Nall, talking about the latest on health and healing. I mentioned at the beginning that there is an herb and an oil of that herb that seems to do a lot of good, and it's called patchouli, P-A-T-C-H-O-U-L-I. And what it does is, according to the latest research, it's an antidepressant. The oil is said to work great for people suffering from depression, and some people claim it helps them to get over the feelings of sadness or loss and gives them a new sense of hope as an aromatherapy. It also soothes inflammation, particularly if the inflammation or irritation is a result of a fever. It's an antiseptic. It's an essential oil. It can be used to protect wounds and ulcers from developing infections and becoming septic. It's an astringent. It stimulates contraction in muscles, nerves, and skin. And it's a cytophylactic, meaning it promotes the growth by stimulating the regeneration of new body cells. It also helps in the production of red blood cells, which can boost energy levels. It's a diuretic. It increases the frequency of urination, therefore the quantity of urination. And that's one way a lot of people will lower their blood pressure and lower their cholesterol and remove toxins in the body. It's even a sedative. It soothes inflammation and sedates convulsions and coughs and epileptic attacks resulting from hypersensitivity of the nerves. And it's been used on eczema, dermatitis, psoriasis, and sores. So it is really important. Just another oil that we should be considering for all the right reasons. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Time now to take some of your calls at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Rob from New York. Hi, Rob. Your turn.
How are you doing? I have a practical question to ask. Now, excuse me, we all know that atherosclerosis, the formation of plaque on the inside of our arteries, is a major cause of strokes and heart attacks. Now, what I would like to know is what specific tests we can get to determine the exact amount of blockage that we may have, whether it's 25%, 50%, 82%, or whatever. And I'm not talking about diagnostic blood tests such as those for cholesterol or C-reactive protein or homocysteine. These and others, as I understand them, pretty much tell us the likelihood of our developing a plaque and other conditions. But I'm interested in knowing tests that actually tell us the present degree of our blockage so that if it's something significant, we can take immediate action to try to reduce it.
All right, well, I would pull back and look at a little larger. There are Doppler measurements that can where you're laying on a table, and they'll put cuffs, little pressure cuffs with sensitizing devices in them. And then as your blood flows through the arteries down to the base of the body, the feet, back up through the veins, it can measure the resistance. And then they have a mathematical model to determine how much of a plaque resistance there is or whatever the resistance might be from. And also that could be from, let's say, hardening of the epithelial tissue. It could be from lesions. It's not just as if there is a blockage. Generally, there's just not one blockage. It's a deterioration of the entire cardiovascular system. And they can give you a pretty good readout on that. There's also cardio stress test where they hook your body up and your chest, your sides, on your back. And then they can see how your heart is reacting at various elevations. They'll take it from a normal ground level to a higher elevation and generally upwards of 20 minutes. And then you're going faster and you're exerting to see if the heart is pumping in normal rhythms or whether you have AFib or tachycardia or any other irregular heartbeat and whether it's a strong beat or a weak beat. And they'll also take your blood pressure during that period of time as well. So it's not as if there's one test that will determine everyone's susceptibility. And hence, go back to what I'd been saying all along, by taking the pro-inflammatory test such as the fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, and homocysteine, and triglycerides and LDL cholesterol, those show you, if they're elevated, that your body is not working on your behalf the way it should, and therefore you are susceptible. Then you combine that with a cardiovascular stress test and the Doppler test. All of together gives you a clearer picture. All right? All the best to you. And let's say hello to Peter from Pennsylvania. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Gary. I have a question for you. If someone is doing very well in their lifestyle, exercising, taking their supplements, eating a vegan diet, doing all the right things, and suddenly becomes sick on a weekly basis with no known cause, just once a week, hits them, dry heaves, vomiting, gone the next day. What could that possibly be?
Well, you first have to look at, if it's episodic, you have to look at what happened the night before, the morning of, and during the day up until that episode, because there could be a delay in some form of environmental or allergic response. Most of the time, when you eat something that you're allergic to, the body lets you know almost instantly. For example, if I have a non-organic apple, I mean, within 10 seconds, my throat begins to itch, my eyes begin to water. But if I eat an organic apple, nothing happens. So I for a long time, I knew I was allergic to oranges and apples. I ate other fruits, but I didn't eat oranges and apples. This was earlier on in my career. And then one weekend, I was upstate with some buddies, and we were looking to buy a farm to make it into a holistic homestead. And we came across this orchard, a relatively small orchard, beautiful view up in Goshen. And it was the fall, and it was apple season, and there were just this wonderful apples. So I said, what the heck, I know what's going to happen, but I'll do it anyhow. So I ate an apple, and nothing happened. I just enjoyed a great apple. And I thought, well, that's strange. And about an hour later, I had another apple. And again, nothing happened. And I thought, well, maybe I'm over my allergen. Because you normally have fixed allergens, or cyclic allergens. So the next day back in New York City, I bought an apple. And immediately the symptoms came back. So then I went back upstate and I tried some other apples, and these other apples gave me a reaction. Then I realized that it was an organic apple I had no reaction to. So then I found out, took about a month, which pesticides had been sprayed, because apples are heavily sprayed. And then I tested myself. I did a scratch test and found out that I wasn't allergic to apples or oranges either. I was allergic to the chemicals that are used on them. And I thought, holy cow, how many other individuals could be suffering as I did? You eliminate a lot of foods because you think you're allergic to it, and it turns out you're not allergic to the food. You're merely allergic to the way the food is either processed or some additive or chemical, pesticide, or herbicide, or fungicide. So that got me into doing far more on then re-challenging people with pesticides. And in fact, what we did is I brought in some individuals and we took dilute solutions and we numbered the bottom of the bottle. And I think we had 40 of them. And we mixed them all up. And then the person, you took their basic blood chemistry and blood pressure, and then you would take a single drop, one drop, from what would look like an eyedropper under their tongue. And then within 60 seconds, you would see if there was any reaction. And lo and behold, we started seeing all kinds of reactions when they were allergic to something. And then we would look at what the chemical was. And sure enough, it was always some chemical, but they were not allergic when the same item was from a natural source. For example, they wouldn't be allergic to the natural fructose from having a dried apple, but they would be allergic to sucrose in the same quantity from white sugar. So then people would frequently say, well, I can't have any sweets at all. Well, no, that's not true. You can have sweets, just don't have the processed sweets. you can have food, don't have the chemicalized food. And then another thing occurred when I saw that people were allergic to multiple things. I mean, I had people came into the office with having seen multiple doctors, including the so-called best and brightest environmental experts, and they would show me a list of one woman, 94 foods she couldn't eat. But I'm looking at this, brown rice and split peas. Well, that's nonsense. No one's going to be allergic to those. So what I did was I asked her, where's your immune profile? She said, well, I've never taken one. I said, you mean a doctor told you you couldn't take any of these, but told you not to eat this? She said, yes. So what I did was we had her take a whole series of immunological studies and found out her immune system was just shot. And then we had her do hormone studies, and her adrenals were shot. So what we were then dealing with, the reality of what we were dealing with, was a woman who had a highly stressed job. She was a lawyer down on Wall Street. She worked very long hours, generally 16 to 18 hours a day. And no one asked her about her job or her stress level. All they did was they just did a basic IgG and IgE mediated response. Said, oh, you're allergic to these things. No, most people are not allergic. They're simply immunocompromised. When you rebuild up the immune system, many of their allergens go away. Now, there are some things that we have fixed allergies to. Those are not going to go away. So you got to get it out of the way that it's not something you've drank or eaten, because generally you'll get a response within 12 hours. So then you have to look at the environment that you're in, working in. If you're working or living or being in an environment once a week that is not your normal environment, and that's when you get sick, then I would look for molds, especially black molds. And most black molds, most people know what they're looking for. This generally occurs from water damage, where carpets become the holder of the mold spores. And then every time you walk on a carpet or vacuum the carpet, these underbed molds come to the surface and get into the air. You can't see them. Or they're in the ceilings, or they're in the drywall. Now, even though the water has dried up, the mold doesn't go away. It just continues to live on its own, and it spreads. And hence, if you're having a reaction, you first have to look at your diet, then you have to look at the environment you're in, and then I would check for molds. And beyond that, I would check for electromagnetic pulses, because if you're in an environment that has an electromagnetic tower that's a signaling and a receiving tower for satellite feeds for cell phones, if you're within a quarter mile of that, that can cause, in sensitive people, that can cause chromosomal disruption, and that one of it can manifest in people simply feeling very sick and very drained. And yet we
do
were
they
fighting
make meters?
That.
Do they make meters to find?
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. There's simple meters. All right, that you could find that. All right,
okay,
Peter. Thank you for your call. Hope that helps.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
I'm Gary Null. This is TalkBack. You've been listening to Robert from New York and Peter from Pennsylvania asking different questions. If you have a question you would like addressed or a comment you'd like to make, now's your time. 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Null, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Noll. Now we're going to take a break for some calls because I have a lot of other things I want to share with you, but we'll get to you. Many of you are opposed to consuming foods that you're not aware may be genetically engineered. Therefore, you'd like to see them labeled. Freedom of choice. Therefore, you can buy them or not. So the New York State Senator, Kristen Gillibrand, was given a letter by Margaretta King. And here is what Mrs. Gillibrand said. Thanks for writing to express your concerns and hope that you'll keep in touch with my office regarding future legislations. But this is really safe. Okay? Here is, and there's no real science to challenge genetic engineering. Here's the response. Honorable Kristen Gillibrand, I'm constantly disturbed to hear congressional offices state that they, quote, need more methods for evaluating the safety of consuming GMOs. I received that statement from your office today. Inform yourself of some of the studies by starting with Dr. Don Huber, Professor Emeritus, Purdue University. He's been studying GMOs for the past 20 years. His scholarly works are available to you from him, or I can email you what I have from him. Furthermore, any curious cursory Google search can find the French study, the Russian study, etc. We have the internet. You can't claim that there is no information. And when it's given to you, saying that you still have more research you have to do. It begs the question, do you want to know or don't you? You did not support the GMO labeling in New York because you were in favor of a national regulation, yet you insist that you also need more study to achieve certainty for labeling. I'm so disappointed in your lack of enthusiasm in this manner. I've heard that there are several other issues that you have been silent on, though asked repeatedly by your constituents. I hope you do not go the way of your male counterparts and ignore the women in your state on this important issue. What we feed our families. We don't want GMOs, and we want your help in achieving labeling. As women, we want to support you, and we see you losing support in a lot of organizations. Please look to this, do something about it, and support the labeling of GMOs so you don't lose your support in our next election. Marguerite King. For those of you who may not know this, I have produced a multi-award-winning documentary called Seeds of Death. You can watch it for free by going up on progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryNoll.com. We also have written a very extensive article, Richard Gale and myself. This article starts by looking at all the pro-GMO people, all the propagandists, all the apologists, all the lobbyists, all the legislators who've allowed themselves to be bought by the GMO lobby. We address every one of their concerns. If they say, oh, there's not enough science, we show there's hundreds of studies. What there's not enough of, they have no studies that show that GMOs are a benefit on any level. And yet they lie. We can show you studies that when independent scientists fed rats with GMO foods, they developed cancers, but they didn't develop them within the first 3 months. And then you start seeing this very odd thing. Virtually all the studies on GMOs for years were 90-day studies. And it was not until we went past the 90 days that we started seeing the tumors. So therefore, when they said, well, we can't find anything bad about GMOs, well, they weren't looking long enough. And one of the most important scientists in the world, who was selected by the European Union to look into GMO safety, had a team of about 26 scientists working with him, and he found out that GMOs are really bad on multiple levels. So what happened was, the moment this study came out, the day it came out, Tony Blair was on it and saw that he was fired and his team disbanded, and then he was attacked. So then the world didn't know about how bad GMOs were. Mind you, these are ruthless people, the GMO people. These are people that run organizations that have been found guilty on so many occasions of doing so many bad things. Look at what they brought us. They brought us Agent Orange. And they polluted a whole city so badly that they had to pay $700 million to residents for knowingly causing massive contamination in the water and in the soil. Their only interest is in making money. And GMOs are bad science at every level. But politicians are generally bad people. They're sociopaths. I don't trust any politicians. I don't like any of them. And whether they're corporate Democrats or corporate Republicans, and there's a reason why they have the lowest rating in history, 9%. And I believe in the next couple of years it'll be zero, because they lie about everything, and we all know how easy it is to buy a politician. Now, this comes from an article entitled "Government Seeking Inclusion of Social and Behavioral Data in Health Records, Experts Worry About Security and Use of Information" from Elizabeth Harrington. And here's what it says, quote, "The Centers for Medical and Medicaid Services wants to require healthcare providers to include, quote, social and behavioral data in electronic health records and to link patients' records to public health departments. Healthcare experts say the proposal raises additional privacy concerns over America's personal health information, on top of worries that the Obamacare data hub could lead to abuse by bureaucrats and identity theft. And so what they want to know now is they want to know everything about you, everything about your personal life. So expect in the future that when you go to see a doctor, it won't be about your arthritis or high blood pressure, about everything else in the world that they can possibly know about you, all your likes and dislikes, so that some governmental agency can have that on you. Why would we want these people to have this? I don't want anyone to have that, but that's where it's going, and yet most people are not protesting. Whatever they're asked, they go ahead and do, and that's unfortunate. All right, also, I want to share a couple more things. This is how bad is it getting. We can expect another revelation in the next week from Edward Snowden vis-a-vis Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald about their assassinations. But this is just to give you an idea of how bad fascism has become. None of what you're hearing today is about keeping America safe from terrorists. That's just stupid. This is about private corporations that are smart enough to manage to get contracts, including no-bid contracts, to study something or be involved in some level of our so-called national security apparatus. These are millions to hundreds of millions or billions of dollar contracts. And now they're wanting everything they can on the American public. And the corporate left and corporate right are equally responsible for this. Here's the latest. These are all mainstream revelations, but no one's discussing the consequence. Example from Washington Blog. The government is spying on essentially everything we do. I mean, everything. And we're not doing anything about it. The government has adopted a secret interpretation of the Patriot Act, which allows it to pretend that everything is relevant. So it spies on everyone all the time. For example, the National Security Agency Oversight Court believes the mere claim that terrorists use the phone system is enough to show that every phone record is relevant. If you were a six-year-old kid and your father was a pastor, it wouldn't matter. You're all guilty now. The National Security Agency whistleblowers say that the National Security Agency collects all of our conversations word for word. I've told you this for a long time. And it's not just the National Security Agency. Many other agencies, including the FBI and the IRS, concerned only with domestic issues. Well, They're supplying through our computers and phones and cars and buses, even street lights at airports and on the street, via mobile scanners and drones to our smart meters. And that's why they want smart meters on our homes. They can spy on you. It has nothing to do with being more energy efficient. And the Drug Enforcement Administration has had direct access to AT&T phone records for 25 years. And the information gained through spying is shared. And it's shared by all these agencies. And they're using this information to prosecute petty crimes. And that's wrong. And the Department of Health and Human Services will also have access to vast quantities of sensitive federal data about Americans' health. And the National Security Agency not only shares our information with other American agencies, it also gives personal, sensitive, unfiltered information to Israel. Well, I got a question for you. Why should anyone in Israel, especially the Mossad, have access to all of our personal data? They shouldn't, but they do. And also, they have all these contractors. These contractors are not federal employees. They're private for-profit companies. And yet they have the right to look into anything in your life they want. And it's not just your computer or your phone. It is well documented. The government is spying on us through cars, buses. They're doing it everywhere they can. And indeed, according to top counterterrorism experts, they say that mass spying actually hurts the United States counterterrorist activities. And they say we can indeed keep everyone safe without violating the Constitution. Well, here's something. Where is the right? Where the Tea Party? Where is the Constitutionists? Where is the Liberty people? Where are all the Christian evangelicals, of which all those together, probably about 100 million people, where are they demonstrating against the National Security Agency or the Patriot Act? I heard Sean Hannity bragging about how he loves the Patriot Act, and he loves it when we spy on other people, and he wants everyone in the world to be spied upon. He just doesn't want any of that used against Americans. Well, sorry, you can't have it that way. So you mean we have the right to violate the sanctity and sovereignty of the president of Brazil or Argentina or their corporations? They've done nothing wrong. We can read their emails, listen to their phone calls, which is against international law. He wants us to be able to do that. This is sociopathic tendencies. My God. Sean, I'm sorry, buddy. You know, you should have been born in the early 1920s in Italy. You'd have been good, real good. Trouble is, it's a different time, and you're out of date. And, you know, this whole fanaticism, this fascistic mindset, you say you're for the Constitution. Well, which part of the Constitution? And when do you go to Washington to protest? Now, you're for the Second Amendment. Okay, fine. But where are you protesting when the American people are spending 53 cents out of every tax dollar for a military-industrial spy complex, and we don't need it? We only need $200 billion, not $1.4 trillion. And that means we don't have money for kids. Oh, I forgot, 18 million hungry children are not in your priority list, are they? Just, you have to understand how sick so many people in the American media are. Indeed, most Congress members had no idea about the National Security Agency, nor do they have the courage to challenge it. Now imagine this. For all these years, there have been people who have been on the House and the Senate intelligence committees who knew full well everything was going on, how illegal it was. Did you hear any of them raise an alarm? No. Any of them blow the whistle? No. And yet these are the ones who all want Snowden's head on a platter. Hannity, why don't you debate someone that actually has a brain instead of these people that you have on, like Bill O'Reilly? They have the same fascistic mindsets on. You know, why don't you bring some people on that could offer a different perspective? Now, who are the real enemies? Who should be challenged? The people reporting on a crime or the people committed the crime? You're defending the people commit the crime. We have this reverence for authority. everywhere I look, that authority is abused and betrayed, any trust that we should give it. Even the current judges on the secret spying court now admit that they're out of the loop and powerless to exercise real oversight. When these judges raised concerns about the national security spying, the Justice Department completely ignored them. A former U.S. president says that the spying program shows we no longer have a functional democracy. In fact, the chairs of the 9/11 Commission say that national security spying has gone way too far. And top constitutional experts say that Obama and Bush are worse than Nixon. In fact, that's how it is. And we're not paying attention. So we've got spying all over the place. And I'm concerned about it. Also, from our environmental segment today, we have this from DSmog blog, Dan Adon Lieber. It says, Stanford scientists, climate change occurring 10 times, that's 1,000% faster than any time in the past 65 million years. And he says, quote, with scant media attention, climate scientists from Stanford University have concluded that climate change is occurring 10 times faster than any time in the past 65 million years, and the current pace of change will lead to a 6 degrees Celsius spike by the end of the century. Okay. Well, if we increased the temperature on the planet by 6 degrees, the planet would not be habitable by humans. But many of us believe that if you just increase it 1 degree more from where it's at now, that it's going to make at least one half the planet no longer sustainable. And that will happen in the next 5 years. So it's bad, and no one's paying attention to it for a simple reason, because there's nothing they want to do about it or can. And finally, from environmental segment, this comes from Douglas Yates from Counterpunch, an article entitled How Obama Made Fukushima Worse. And because we do so much on the environment, this is important. The Obama administration's failure to alert Americans to the danger of Fukushima radiation is motivated by corporate politics and the interests of the nuclear power industry. The March 11, 2011 earthquake off the northwest coast of Japan wrecked a complex of nuclear power plants, throwing 3 units into meltdown and exploding high-level radionuclides into the environment. With the industry's reputation and billions of dollars in financial arrangements hanging in the fire, the president chose expediency, saying there was no threat to Americans. Now, these assurances were highlighted recently when Fukushima Daiichi's operators reported that since the earthquake, it has been spilling large amounts of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean. And while great efforts have been made to sequester hot water in tank farms, the tanks are leaking and the buildings are insecure. And among the toxins soaking coastal zone soils are fission products, cesium 134 and 137, strontium 90, iodine 131 and 129, along with various isotopes of tritium, uranium, and plutonium. Now, these elements and hundreds of others have escaped containment and are moving into the North Pacific at the rate that varies from 300 to 900 tons of water per day. That's 900 tons of water per day. And following the president's lead, most of the media has ignored the story, leaving many Americans in the dark. But the blinders are off in Alaska and the west coast of North America as more people figure the implications of tainted seaweed. It's tainted fish. Pacifica tuna ranges from California and Japan on its annual migration. And sampled by scientists from Stanford University, tuna were found with elevated cesium 134 and 137 in their muscle tissue. I mean, high amounts. All of it, not a single clear sample. And a public health official in British Columbia is urging the federal government to monitor salmon and tuna. And last week, the state of Washington said it would begin testing salmon and steelhead. And the newspaper in Alaska's capital, Juneau, is asking science to settle the question, writing, quote, let's be 100% sure our Alaska salmon are safe to eat. So, distrust of safety assurances here and in Japan mounted when the plant operator, TEPCO, admitted that it had lowballed previous data and that actual releases were 30% greater than earlier claims. Numbers are being revised upward almost daily. And currently, while the totals remain in flux, independent observers suggest that Fukushima has surpassed Chernobyl in the amount of radiation released into the environment. And Chernobyl spilled 85 quadrillion becquerels across Europe, while Fukushima climbed is now 276 quadrillion. In some estimates, outliers put it as 690 quadrillion. Now, approximately half the initial aerosol released fell into the ocean, and maps show that 12,000 square miles of land have been contaminated with cesium and other isotopes. Of this area, 4,500 square miles exceeds human safety limits. Of 1 MSV, which is millisievert per year, and that means that 200,000 Japanese have become refugees just in these areas. And the Japanese government, as expedient as Obama, quickly raised the allowable dose from 1 to 20, 20 times, 2,000% higher amounts of radiation that they could absorb. And people should have been evacuated. But now they're remaining at home, saying, well, we're in the safe level. No, you're not. You're soaking in cesium. And according to Physicians for Social Responsibility, the dose exposed in children is 1 in 200 risk of getting cancer. And if they're exposed to this dose for 2 years, then it's 1 in 100 children in Japan will get cancer. And there's no way that this level of exposure can be considered safe for children. And these radionuclides concentrate as they move along the food chain from plankton and kelp and herring and up the line to salmon and seals and bears and people. And the cesium contaminated food bioaccumulates in the heart and the endocrine tissues as well as the kidneys and the pancreas and liver and the spleen. And children, in particular, like girls, are many times more susceptible than adults to the effects of this ionizing radiation. Bad to the bone. And when the exclusion zone boundaries were announced at a place inside the red line, the oldest man in the village, 102, killed himself rather than evacuate. In front of the village hall, a machine that looked like an oversized parking meter flashed a real-time radiation reading in red letters. And being there was equivalent to receiving a chest x-ray every 12 hours. And at the Berkeley campus of University of California, rainwater collected on March 23, 2011, measured iodine-131 reactivity at 20 becquerels per liter. And the federal maximum level is 0.1 per liter. The sample exceeded the level by 181 times. And Fukushima radiation was further confirmed when Berkeley researchers discovered iodine-131 in California dairy milk in a local waterway. And similarly, high levels of iodine-131 were recorded in Portland, Olympia, Boise, and Points East. The U.S. government organized a multi-agency stealth response in the wake of the reactor meltdowns, and Friends of the Earth and others filed a Freedom of Information Act request to learn how the crisis was being managed in the days after March 11th, and a trove of emails moving between the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, its field agents, Japan, and other agencies show efforts to downplay concern, cover it up, withhold information, stonewall, and within days of the event, federal managers' emails tallied plumes of radiation 131, iodine 131, as they approached America. And supervisors demanded confidentiality while maintaining a press blackout, assuring that most Americans had no chance to prepare or migrate. And James Mangano, who I had on this program last week, and an epidemiologist, Dr. Janet Sherman, she also has a background in toxicology, calculated the health effects of from radiation exposure. And their review of U.S. death before and after March 11th showed that 22,000 Americans could die as a result of radiation from Fukushima. And it's carried east by the jet stream and deposits rain and snow and uptake into people and plants and animals through inhalation, ingestion, and contact. And infants under the age of one had the highest increase in reported deaths in the 14 weeks after Fukushima's initial explosions. An increased death was also seen in the aged, the infirm, and the immune compromised. Today, radioactivity washing out to sea is in a combination of seawater that's being used to cool the wreckage and an influx of groundwater. And the groundwater is rising at the toe of the slope behind the facility, threatening to inundate the complex. And people working there say the surface is becoming unstable and that building foundations may fail. And yet, we are told nothing. We're told, not a problem, don't worry. We should worry because it's bad. The Fukushima disaster is worse than Chernobyl. And if that building collapses, building four, we will have started the process of killing tens of millions of people on this planet. Shocking, yes. Stupid, yes. But then that's our entire body politic in America. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for calling in and listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program.
What a difference.